my suggestion to the majority leader that we work on these real issues rather than these three issues that I've discussed. We need to approach these last few weeks in a bipartisan way. And we are reaching out to the majority to let us tackle the real urgent issues facing our country, and there are urgent issues facing our country. Americans are frustrated with the direction America is headed, and they're equally frustrated with the performance of the Bush White House and the Bush Republican Congress. With just a few months remaining before we adjourn, the 109th Congress is going into the history books as the country's least productive Congress in the more than 200 years we've been a country. In fact, the 109th Congress is on track to exceed the famous Do-Nothing Congress of 1948, and there have been articles written on that. I'm not making it up. This Congress, we've worked on class action and bankruptcy, legislation that benefits big business. And I've helped with that, Mr. President. But we need to do something to help the vast majority of the American people. And to check these things off as being great accomplishments, I don't think that's right. The Senate, thanks to Democrats, did pass lobbying and ethics reform legislation known as the Honest Leadership and Open Government Act. But as yet, we've heard not a single word from the House on this issue. And passing important legislation like the Honest Government Act has proved to be the exception and not the rule. Congress hasn't passed a budget. We haven't completed last year's budget, as a matter of fact. And I might add again, the ethics legislation we passed in the Senate has yet to be considered in the House. America can do better. America could do much better. This week, the supplemental appropriation bill is on the floor. It is important legislation, especially since President Bush refused to put the cost of the war in Iraq, of Iraq, or the cost of helping Korean victims in his budget. Why? Can you imagine that? We are doing a supplemental appropriation bill on matters that should have been in the budget that was brought before the Congress some time ago. Why is it done this? It's done this way, Mr. President, to try to disguise the staggering deficits this administration has run up. The best example that I can give to the American people is what would happen if they did their budgeting the way the White House does their budgeting. We make so much money in our household, but to make our budget complete, what we're going to do is eliminate our car payments and our house payments. That, in fact, what the president has done. He had a budget, but he eliminated the cost of the war in Iraq and the cost of the Gulf catastrophe. And now we're coming up here in the last few weeks before the Pentagon runs out of money to say we've got to do it. It's an emergency. It's not an emergency. We had a bill. We should have taken it up. This part of our ordinary costs of government, just like I explained. How can a person who has their own household budget eliminate car payments or house payments or any other example you want to give? That's what this White House has done, and it's wrong. But in spite of the president's budget gimmicks, Democrats look forward to the debate on the supplemental. We have a number of what we believe are tough and very smart amendments that we will offer to protect the American people, address the situation in Iraq, and provide relief from the energy crisis here at home. When the Senate is finished with this supplemental, Democrats will insist the majority leader put his partisan agenda on the back burner and continue to focus the Senate on issues of urgent national importance. I believe we as a Senate owe to the American people to focus on their needs and not waste a single day focusing on partisan needs. Mr. President, we're asking in a bipartisan manner to reach out to the American people and say, we've got something that will help you. What this would mean, though, is setting aside issues like the marriage amendment, tackling an issue like gas prices. The price of gas has increased 100% during this president's last 5 years in office. 100%. 35 cents to 50 cents in the last month, and over the weekend, 10 or 15 cents. San Diego, I heard this morning, highest price as of yesterday in San Diego, about $3.10 a gallon. But Nevada's not far behind. There are places in Nevada charging over $3 a gallon for gasoline. Today, many families are paying $100 to fill their gas tanks, only to drive to work, pick up the kids, and whatever they have to do to get to and from work. $100 to fill it. Now, people can say, well, why don't they buy a car that doesn't use so much gas? That's for them to decide, Mr. President. And they're getting no help from this administration to establish CAFE standards so that cars are more fuel efficient. $100 to fill many of the vehicles in America today. These prices are taking an enormous toll on the pocketbooks of hardworking Americans. They're even more difficult with families to swallow given the headlines about how Exxon sent their chief executive officer into retirement with more than a $400 million golden parachute. That's about a half a billion dollars to retire. A golden parachute, that's what you get upon retirement. About a half a billion dollars. There's nothing wrong with corporate profits. I'm all for Americans having retirement security. But does anyone think it's fair to have consumers pay $100 a week to fill their fuel tanks and the big energy bosses fill their bank tanks with hundreds of millions of dollars? We, on a bipartisan basis, need to work to provide consumers relief at the gas pump. It's much more important than measures to appease a few. We ask on behalf of America that the majority move to legislation that allows us to pass a federal law with teeth and resources to go after price gougers regarding fuel. The profiteers, the energy market speculators. We ask the Republican majority to debate a windfall profits tax. With a windfall profits tax, we can take big oil's excess profits and give them right back to the consumers in rebates, or use them to build alternative and renewable fuel facilities. If the greedy oil companies won't invest their billions in profit in delivering affordable domestic fuels for America, then maybe America needs to take some of the windfall profits and put them to better use. And what is so difficult, Mr. President, I worked a lot putting myself through school, worked for Standard Stations, I worked for Chevron Oil, worked in all kinds of gas stations, pumping gas, changing oil, lube jobs, tires, and all that stuff. Back then, my brother ran a service station for many years. Back then, Mr. President, oil companies made about 4 or 5 cents a gallon on gasoline. Gasoline then was really cheap. Now with gas at $3 a gallon or more, they still make the same amount of money. The service station operator still makes the same amount of money. $3 a gallon, he makes 4 or 5 cents a gallon. So when you go in to fill your car up with gasoline, don't be mad at that corner service station, because Exxon and all these other big oil companies are the greedy ones taking all the profit. The obscene profits. They're not by the guy that you're going to have your windows washed or asking them to fill up tank number 6 and you pump it yourself. We ask the Republican majority to bring before the United States Senate legislation that will secure America's energy future so we can put an end to the cycle of higher and higher and higher gasoline prices. If the majority so moved, the Senate could develop a more aggressive national energy policy that would deliver affordable, clean energy from domestic sources now, not in 30 years or whenever the oil company CEOs decide the time is right. We cannot produce our way out of the oil problems we have. We in America, including the oil that they say is in Alaska, have less than 3% of the reserves in the world. We can't produce our way out of our problems. We've got to look to alternative energy sources. It's terrible to think that American consumers are sending billions and billions of dollars overseas to pay for oil, and some of that money, I'm told, may be getting into the hands of violent anti-United States groups. Even if that's not true, wouldn't it be better that we were like Brazil, a country who's area-wise bigger than the United States? Lots and lots of people. Brazil is energy independent. They produce oil, but they also have determined that they are not going to import oil. And as of this June, this coming June, just a few weeks from now, they will be totally energy independent. They started a number of years ago an alternative energy program, and it worked. Brazil, this huge country, heavily populated, large in area, they're energy independent. Think what America would be if we did not have to use 21 million barrels of oil a day, over 60% of which we import. Brazil's an example. It can be done. Mr. President, national security, another issue that deserves considerable time on the floor in the remaining months. I'm confident we'll ultimately pass the supplemental for our troops. And the majority has pledged to bring the defense authorization bill to the floor. I heard that earlier. That was a plan before we left for our recess. I hope that's true. Bring it to the floor when? Do we want to wait as we did last year until the fall, leaving our troops, our veterans, and their families without the resources they need? I hope not. Unlike last year, I hope the defense authorization bill will not be pushed aside for other less important business. The troops are depending on us. It's so important. It was wrong to wait as long as we did last year. Sets up the pay for the troops, what new equipment they need. It authorizes what the appropriators must come forward with to help our brave men and women. I also hope we can pass last year's intelligence authorization bill. Interesting, Mr. President. We more than ever, depending on our security, we more than any other time are depending for our security through our intelligence. What does that mean? It means through our spies, our satellites, the other things we do to make America safe. But because of the majority, we have not brought an intelligence bill before the Senate. Why? Because they're afraid amendments will be offered on prison abuse scandals, on how intelligence was manipulated prior to going to war. We have not even had an intelligence authorization bill. Right now, we're in danger of not passing that important bill for the first time in 28 years because Republicans have been unwilling to hold the Bush White House accountable for its conduct in the war in Iraq and the war on terror. The first time in 28 years, Mr. President, that we're not going to take up this most important bill dealing with the safety and security of our nation. I ask, is it important we do that? Is it more important we do that or talk about same-sex marriage or estate tax, which will affect a fraction of the percent of the American people, a tiny, tiny fraction of the American people? I think it's more important that we deal with intelligence authorization bill. Health care. Shouldn't we dive into health care and talk about it? That's something when you go home, and home could be any place in our 50 states, whether you're a big company, a little company, a rich man, a poor woman, it doesn't matter. People are concerned about the cost of health care. Surely we can agree that health care problems in our country are far more important than a handful of amendments to please the right wing. But we need a real health care debate, not a 2 or 3 day mini debate. The majority leader said he'll bring the Senate floor a health care bill, the Enzi bill. He said he was going to do it during this work period. The Enzi bill threatens existing coverage for everyone who has state-regulated health insurance. It's touted as a cure for the problems small businesses have in providing coverage to their employees, but it would actually expose small businesses to fraud and leave self-employed individuals with the same, if not more, problems than they have right now. We all agree that small businesses need health care relief. All business needs health care relief. But the ANSI approach is not the way to move forward. Senator Durbin has a bill in committee that will provide small businesses with the same kind of options senators have. Why don't we bring this bill to the floor? Debate them together. Find out what is the best of the two or what's the best mix we could have of the two. With the ANSI and the Durbin bills, we can have a real debate about health care. And we can also consider other problems facing our health care system, like lowering drug prices, health care costs, expanding coverage, and fixing the president's botched Medicare drug program. And if we're going to talk about health care, isn't it about time we got to stem cell research? We're approaching May 24th, 1 year anniversary of the House passing their stem cell bill, and we still haven't seen it here in the Senate. Ask any of the Nevadans that I visited if they're more interested in seeing the Senate spend its time on the issues of stem cells, an issue that offers hope to millions and millions of Americans suffering from heart disease, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig disease, diabetes, or if they'd rather see the Senate spend its remaining days debating same-sex marriage. The answer is obvious. And I would hope the majority leader who said he supports stem cell research would allow us to move forward with the House bill. Stem cell research offers hope to millions of Americans, and the Senate must not stand in its way. Immigration. President Bush likes to point fingers on immigration and many other issues. I repeat, Mr. President, President Bush likes to point his finger on immigration and many other issues. Isn't it about time we move beyond that? Isn't it about time that we pass comprehensive immigration reform that will secure our borders and secure our country? Before we left for a two-week break, we had a bipartisan immigration deal that was blocked by a handful of Republican senators. That arrangement would have sealed our porous borders, given 12 million undocumented workers a reason to come out of the shadows, and provided personnel to enforce our laws so existing employer sanctions would be more than just words. It also had a very important provision there to take care of guest workers. The Senate can move forward on immigration if the President will stand up to those in his party who are filibustering reform and tell them to quit standing in the way of American security. Mr. President, it's my understanding that the President gave a speech in Orange County, California today. By the way, that's where San Diego is, the highest gas prices in the country. Maybe should have spent a few minutes talking about that. Talking about immigration, he said he wants to do something about security. Yeah, we all want to do something about securing our borders. Everybody, Mr. President. Is that a stand of integrity and courage? No. Everybody wants to do something about protecting our poorest borders. And he says he wants to do something about a guest worker program. What? What does he want to do? It's easy for him to criticize. What does he want to do? Let us know what he wants to do. He's the leader of his party. He never got involved in the immigration debate till after all the two votes had taken place. And then he was a great finger pointer. And it's interesting, in all that I've heard the President talk about immigration, what does he say about the 12 million people who are here who are undocumented? What does he want to do? His party is split. What does the President of the United States want to do? What does he want to do on security? He wants to protect our borders. So do we. What does he want to do with guest workers? Rather than just words, tell us what his program is. He has a staff of thousands. Have a few of them come and tell us what the President wants on a guest worker program. And what, it appears he doesn't want anything, but does he want us to do anything with the 12 million? Let him take a stand on that. See, the Martinez bill that came before the Senate that was not supported by any of the Republicans, the Martinez bill had a provision in it to give 7,000 new workers to the immigration naturalization. Their sole function would be employer sanction enforcement. I thought that was a step in the right direction. Does the president want that? Does he want more? Does he want stronger employer sanctions? I repeat, what does he want regarding immigration? I think he's got to move beyond security, because all 100 senators want that. Finally, if we're going to do taxes, let's do something that will make a difference for those who need it. Talk to any economist, and they'll tell you that in America today, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class, Mr. President, is just being squeezed. Could we spend a little bit of time here on the Senate floor talking about tax relief for the middle class, this vanishing breed we have in America? The rich, you know, anymore it's not much of a distinction to be a millionaire. It's whether or not you're a multi-billionaire. That's what gets some attention. Millionaires, not much anymore, but there's a lot more of them. The poor are getting poorer and poorer, rich, richer and richer. The middle class is being squeezed. Could we start with this tax debate by fixing the AMT, average minimum tax? AMT was originally established to ensure that millionaires paid their fair share. But because AMT income levels were not indexed for inflation, it has essentially become a tax increase for millions of middle class families. This is never its purpose, and we should fix it and fix it quickly. Now, tax fairness should be the Senate's focus, not immoral, unfair tax breaks that will benefit a privileged few, further exacerbating the problem we have in America today, where the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class getting squeezed. So in the weeks ahead, we're ready. Democrats ready to work with the majority on the real issues facing our country. Spend some time here debating these issues, legislating from high gas prices to immigration to improving our national security. We want to put politics aside and take up the real work facing our country. With the right priorities and the right commitment from the majority, we can move America in a new direction and give the American people the real solutions they deserve and they need. America can do better, and we can do it together. That's what we need, bipartisanship, working together on America's problems.
Mr. President.
The Senator from West Virginia.
An oft repeated metaphor compares the United States Senate to a saucer in which a hot liquid is poured to cool. The earliest known written version of this story appears in an 1871 letter from constitutional law professor Francis Lieber, spelled L-I-E-B-E-R, to Ohio representative and later president, James A. Garfield. Lieber recounted a story he had heard about Thomas Jefferson's visit to Mount Vernon, where Jefferson disagreed with General George Washington over the need for a bicameral legislature. And Washington's response, "You yourself," said the general, "have proved the excellence of two houses this very moment." "Aye," said Jefferson, "how is that, General?" "You have," replied the heroic sage, "turned your hot tea from the cup into the saucer to get it cool." It is the same thing that we desire of the two houses. The Washington-Jefferson dialogue drew further attention in the writings of the late 19th century American historian Moncur D. Conway, who altered the language and the beverage. There is a tradition that on his return from France, Jefferson called Washington to account at the breakfast table for having agreed to a second chamber. "Why?" asked Washington. "Did you pour that coffee into the saucer? Why did you do that?" "To cool it," answered Jefferson. "Even so," said Washington, "we pour legislation into the senatorial saucer to cool it." Francis Lieber never discovered the source of this delicious anecdote, but whether or not the incident really occurred, the story has been widely embraced because it conveys the essence of the United States Senate. What is the essence? It is a deliberative body. It is a deliberative body, sheltered from shifting public opinion by longer and staggered terms, and originally by being elected via the state legislatures. It serves as a counterbalance to the U.S. House of Representatives. The saucer story explains in simple terms the significance of the Senate. From its origins through its evolution into the most powerful upper body of any national legislature in the world. Did you get that? Think about that. Senators and other close observers of the institution have grappled with their own ideas about the Senate, seeking to highlight its unique and enduring attributes, and to explain its role in the American system of checks and balances. What is it? What is it? What is it that makes the Senate stand apart from other legislative bodies? What is it? What is it that makes the Senate stand apart from other legislative bodies? Why have its seemingly arcane rules and traditions survived? And what purpose do they serve? Over the next few months, the Lord willing, you see, the book of James in the Bible said, don't say I'll go here or I'll go there to this city or that city and I'll buy this or that. You better qualify that. As my old mom used to say, Robert, you must say, if the Lord willing, if the Lord wills it, you will do thus and so. If the Lord willing, or God willing. That has stuck by me all through these 80 and more years. If the Lord wills it. Well, over the next few months, the Lord willing. I can't say that, you know. I say, over the next few months, who knows? But if the Lord wills it, God willing, in other words, over the next few months, I plan to offer a series of addresses in which I shall sample these ideas of the Senate with some explanation of each observer. Their ideas have ranged from the necessity of the Senate to its role as a balance wheel with the people's house. The people's house. The other body. They have focused on the rules of the Senate and its civility and decorum. They have viewed the Senate as a protector of constitutional liberties, a source of stability, and a product of politics. As a deliberative body, the Senate has been hailed as a place for second thoughts, as a continuing body, and as an institution that values its traditions. The form of Senate elections, changed by constitutional amendment, and the rules for unlimited debate and cloture have been adjusted over the years. But the Senate still differs in fundamental ways from the House of Representatives. It stands out. The Senate does. The Senate stands out as a body of individuals with peculiar folk ways that have fostered what has been described as the Senate type. The, quote, Senate type, T-Y-P-E, type. A body of equals among individuals and among states, the Senate has been a difficult institution to lead. A difficult institution to lead. Its deliberations have frustrated. Yes, its deliberations have frustrated impatient presidents. Well, who cares? Senators don't care if they frustrate presidents. Presidents come and go. Senators may stay on and on and on. Its deliberations have frustrated impatient presidents, leaders of the House, and even, yes, leaders of the Senate who seek speedy enactment. Let's get it done. We're in a hurry. Let's get it done. Do it now. Remember that TV advertisement which said, do it now. Do it here. Do it now. Do it now. Well, there have been many efforts to modernize the Senate in order to meet new challenges. I've been here a long time, and I've seen these efforts on the part of senators. Some of them come over from the House of Representatives. They want to make this body into another House. Let's get it done. Get it done. Do it now. Do it here. Fast. Well, yes, there have been many efforts to modernize the Senate in order to meet new challenges. Able leaders have demonstrated courage and skill in forging alliances and building friendships to pass legislation. I did that, and I was a leader of the Senate. Forge alliances with such and such a senator. Forge an alliance. Despite more than two centuries of pressures to change and modernize. Let's put quotation marks around that word, modernize. Despite more than two centuries of pressures to change and modernize, the Senate as an institution remains similar to the body created at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. It retains all of its original powers, including providing advice and consent. Yes, you said it. You better read that again in the Constitution. It retains all of its original powers, including providing advice and consent to presidents on nominations and on treaties, serving as a court of impeachment. You better believe it, Mr. President. The Senate can send you home. Yeah, you better believe that. If the House impeaches you, the Senate will try you. The Senate, don't forget it. Serving as a court of impeachment and having an equal say with the House on legislation. The Senate has an equal say with the other body on legislation. As my statements in the weeks ahead, Lord willing, God willing, will suggest the distinctive features of the Senate. Let me say that again. As my statements in the weeks ahead will suggest, the distinctive features of the Senate have survived for so long because they have purpose and will endure as long as they serve the good of the nation. Mr. President, I yield the floor, and I suggest the absence of a quorum.
The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Akaka.